The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, Mark Twain. Chapter 35. Escaping Properly. Dark Schemes. Discrimination in Stealing. A Deep Hole. It'd be almost an hour yet till breakfast, so we left and struck down into the woods, because Tom said we got to have some light to see how to dig by, and lantern makes too much and might get us into trouble. What we must have was a lot of them rotten chunks that's called foxfire and just makes a soft kind of glow when you lay them in a dark place. We fetched an armful and hid it in the weeds and sat down to rest. And Tom says, kind of dissatisfied, "Blame it, this whole thing is just as easy and awkward as it can be. And so it makes it so rotten difficult to get up a difficult plan. There ain't no watchman to be drugged. Now there ought to be a watchman. There ain't even a dog to give a sleeping mixture to. And there's Jim chained by one leg with a 10-foot chain to the leg of his bed. Why, all you gotta do is lift up the bedstead and slip off the chain. And Uncle Silas, he trusts everybody. Sends the key to the punkin-headed nigger, and don't send nobody to watch the nigger. Jim could have got out of that window hole before this, only there wouldn't be no use trying to travel with a 10-foot chain on his leg. Why, drat it, Huck, it's the stupidest arrangement I ever see. You got to invent all the difficulties. Well, we can't help it. We got to do the best we can with the materials we got. Anyhow, there's one thing. There's more honor in getting him out through a lot of difficulties and dangers where there weren't one of them furnished to you by the people who was their duty to furnish them, and you had to contrive them all out of your own head. Now look at just that one thing of the lantern. When you come down to the cold facts, we simply gotta let on that a lantern's risky. Why, we could work with a torchlight procession if we wanted to, I believe. Now, while I think of it, we got to hunt up something to make a saw out of the first chance we get. What do we want of a saw? What do we want of it? Hain't we got to saw the leg off of Jim's bed so as to get the chain loose? Why, you just said a body could lift up the bedstead and slip the chain off. Well, if that ain't just like you, Huck Finn, you can get up the infant schooliest ways of going at a thing. Why, ain't you ever read any books at all? Baron Trank, nor Casanova, nor Benvenuto Cellini, nor Henry IV, nor none of them heroes? Who ever heard of getting a prisoner loose in such an old maidy way as that? No, the way all the best authorities does it is to saw the bed leg in two and leave it just so, and swallow the sawdust so it can't be found, and put some dirt and grease around the sawed place so the very keenest seneschal can't see no sign of its being sawed and thinks the bed leg is perfectly sound. Then, the night you're ready, fetch the leg a kick, down she goes, slip off your chain, and there you are. Nothing to do but hitch your rope ladder to the battlements, shin down it, break your leg in the moat, because a rope ladder is 19 foot too short, you know. And there's your horses and your trusty vassals, and they scoop you up and fling you across the saddle, and away you go to your native Languedoc or Navarre or wherever it is. It's gaudy, Huck. I wish there was a moat to this cabin. If we get time, the night of the escape, we'll dig one. I says, what do we want of a moat when we're going to snake him out from under the cabin? But he never heard me. He had forgot me and everything else. He had his chin in his hand, thinking. Pretty soon he sighs and shakes his head, then sighs again and says, nope, it wouldn't do. There ain't necessity enough for it. For what? I says. Why, to saw Jim's leg off, he says. Good land, I says, why, there ain't no necessity for it. And what would you want to saw his leg off for, anyway? Well, some of the best authorities has done it. They couldn't get the chain off, so they just cut the hand off and shoved. And a leg would be better still. But we gotta let that go. There ain't necessity enough in this case. And besides, Jim's a nigger, and wouldn't understand the reasons for it, and how it's the custom in Europe. So we'll let it go. But there's one thing. He can have a rope ladder. We can tear up our sheets and make him a rope ladder easy enough. And we can send it to him in a pie. It's mostly done that way. And I've et worse pies. Why, Tom Sawyer, how you talk, I says. Jim ain't got no use for a rope ladder. He has got use for it. How you talk, you better say. You don't know nothing about it. He's got to have a rope ladder. They all do. What in the nation can he do with it? Do with it? He can hide it in his bed, can he? That's what they all do. And he's got to, too. Huck, you don't ever seem to want to do anything that's regular. You want to be starting something fresh all the time. Suppose he don't do nothing with it. Ain't it there in his bed for a clue after he's gone? And don't you reckon they'll want clues? Of course they will. And you wouldn't leave them any. That would be a pretty howdy-do, wouldn't it? I never heard of such a thing. Well, I says, if it's in the regulations, and he's got to have it, all right, let him have it. Because I don't wish to go back on no regulations. But there's one thing, Tom Sawyer. If we go to tearing up our sheets to make Jim a rope ladder, we're going to get into trouble with Aunt Sally, just as sure as you're born. Now, the way I look at it, a hickory bark ladder don't cost nothing, and don't waste nothing, and is just as good to load up a pie with, and hide in a straw tick, as any rag ladder you can start. And as for Jim, he ain't had no experience, and so he don't care what kind of a... Aw, shucks, Huck Finn. If I was as ignorant as you, I'd keep still. That's what I'd do. Who ever heard of a state prisoner escaping by a hickory bark ladder? Why, it's perfectly ridiculous. Well, all right, Tom. Fix it your own way. But if you'll take my advice, you'll let me borrow a sheet off the clothesline. He said that would do. And that gave him another idea. And he says, borrow a shirt, too. What do we want of a shirt, Tom? Want it for Jim to keep a journal on. Journal your granny? Jim can't write. Suppose he can't write. He can make marks on the shirt, can he? If we make him a pen out of an old pewter spoon or a piece of an old iron barrel hoop. Why, Tom, we can pull a feather out of a goose and make him a better one and quicker, too. Prisoners don't have geese running around the donjon keep to pull pens out of, you know, you muggins. They always make their pens out of the hardest, toughest, troublesomest piece of old brass candlestick or something like that they can get their hands on. And it takes them weeks and months to file it out. Because they got to do it by rubbing it on the wall. They wouldn't use a goose quill if they had it. It ain't regular. Well, then, what'll we make them the ink out of? Many makes it out of iron rust and tears. But that's the common sort, and women. The best authorities uses their own blood. Jim can do that. And when he wants to send any little common, ordinary, mysterious message to let the world know where he's captivated, he can write it on the bottom of a tin plate with a fork. And throw it out the window. The iron mask always done that. And it's a blame good way, too. Jim ain't got no tin plates. They feed him in a pan. That ain't nothing. We can get him some. Can't nobody read his plates. That ain't got nothing to do with it, Huck Finn. All he's got to do is write on the plate and throw it out. You don't have to be able to read it. Why, half the time you can't read anything a prisoner writes on a tin plate or anywhere else. Well, then, what's the sense in wasting the plates? Why, blame it all, it ain't the prisoner's plates. But it's somebody's plates, ain't it? Well, supposing it is, What does the prisoner care who's... He broke off there because we heard the breakfast horn blowing, so we cleared out for the house. Along during the morning, I borrowed a sheet and a white shirt off the clothesline, and I found an old sack and put them in it. And we went down and got the foxfire and put that in it too. I called it borrowing, because that was what Pap always called it. But Tom said it weren't borrowing, it was stealing. He said we was representing prisoners, and prisoners don't care how they get a thing, so they get it. And nobody don't blame them for it, either. It ain't no crime in a prisoner to steal the thing he needs to get away with, Tom said. It's his right. And so, as long as we was representing a prisoner, we had a perfect right to steal anything on this place we had the least use for to get ourselves out of prison with. He said if we weren't prisoners, it would be a very different thing, and nobody but a mean, ornery person would steal when he weren't a prisoner. So we allowed we would steal everything there was that come handy. And yet, he made a mighty fuss one day after that, when I stole a watermelon out of the nigger patch and eat it. And he made me go and give the niggers a dime without telling them what it was for. Tom said that what he meant was we could steal anything we needed. Well, I says I needed the watermelon. But he said I didn't need it to get out of prison with. That's where the difference was. He said if I'd have wanted to hide a knife in and smuggle it to Jim to kill the Seneschal with, it would have been all right. So I let it go at that, though I couldn't see no advantage in my representing a prisoner if I got to sit down and chaw over a lot of gold-leaf distinctions like that every time I see a chance to hog a watermelon. Well, as I was saying, we waited that morning till everybody was settled down to business and nobody in sight around the yard. Then Tom, he carried the sack into the lean-to while I stood off a piece to keep watch. By and by, he comes out, and we went and sat down on the woodpile to talk. He says, everything's all right now except tools, and that's easy fixed. Tools? I says. Yes. Tools for what? Why, to dig with. We ain't a-going to gnaw him out, are we? Ain't them old cripple picks and things in there good enough to dig a nigger out with? I says. He turns on me, looking pitying enough to make a body cry, and says, Huck Finn, did you ever hear of a prisoner having picks and shovels and all the modern conveniences in his wardrobe to dig himself out with? Now, I want to ask you, if you got any reasonableness in you at all, what kind of a show would that give him to be a hero? Why, they might as well lend him the key and be done with it. Picks and shovels, why, they wouldn't furnish him to a king. Well then, I says, if we don't want the picks and shovels, what do we want? Couple of case knives. To dig the foundations out from under that cabin with? Yes. Confound it, it's foolish, Tom. It don't make no difference how foolish it is. It's the right way, and it's the regular way. And there ain't no other way that ever I heard of, and I've read all the books that gives any information about these things. They always dig out with a case knife, and not through dirt, mind you. Generally, it's through solid rock, and it takes them weeks and weeks and weeks, and forever and ever. Why, look at one of them prisoners in the bottom dungeon of the Castle d'If in the harbor of Marseille that dug himself out that way. How long was he at it, you reckon? I don't know. Well, guess. I don't know. A month and a half? 37 years, and he come out in China. That's the kind. I wish the bottom of this fortress was solid rock. Jim don't know nobody in China. What's that got to do with it? Neither did the other fella. But you're always a-wandering off on a side issue. Why can't you stick to the main point? All right, I don't care where he comes out, so he comes out. And Jim don't either, I reckon. But there's one thing anyway. Jim's too old to be dug out with a case knife. He won't last. Yes, he will last, too. You don't reckon it's going to take 37 years to dig out through a dirt foundation, do you? How long will it take, Tom? Well, we can't risk being as long as we ought to, because it mayn't take very long for Uncle Silas to hear from down there by New Orleans. He'll hear Jim ain't from there. Then his next move will be to advertise Jim or something like that. So we can't risk being as long digging him out as we ought to. By rights, I reckon we ought to be a couple of years, but we can't. Things being so uncertain, what I recommend is this, that we really dig right in, as quick as we can. And after that, we can let on to ourselves that we was at it 37 years. Then, we can snatch him out and rush him away the first time there's an alarm. Yeah, I reckon that'll be the best way. Now, there's sense in that, I says. Letting on don't cost nothing. Letting on ain't no trouble. And if it's any object, I don't mind letting on we was at it 150 year. It wouldn't strain me none after I got my hand in. So I'll mosey along now and smooch a couple of case knives. Smooch three, he says. We want one to make a saw out of. Tom, if it ain't unregular and irreligious to suggest it, I says, there's an old rusty saw blade around yonder sticking under the weatherboarding behind the smokehouse. He looked kind of weary and discouraged-like, and says, it ain't no use to try to learn you nothing, Huck. Run along and smooch the knives, three of them. So I done it. Chapter 36. The Lightning Rod, His Level Best, A Bequest to Posterity, A High Figure. As soon as we reckoned everybody was asleep that night, we went down the lightning rod and shut ourselves up in the lean-to and got out our pile of foxfire and went to work. We cleared out everything out of the way, about 4 or 5 foot along the middle of the bottom log. Tom said he was right behind Jim's bed now, and we'd dig in under it. And when we got through, there couldn't nobody in the cabin ever know there was any hole there, because Jim's counterpin hung down most to the ground, and you'd have to raise it up and look under to see the hole. So we dug and dug with the case knives till most midnight, and then we was dog-tired, and our hands was blistered, and yet you couldn't see we'd done anything hardly. At last I says, this ain't no 37-year job. This is a 38-year job, Tom Sawyer. He never said nothing, but he sighed, and pretty soon he stopped digging. And then, for a good little while, I knowed that he was thinking. Then he says, it ain't no use, Huck. It ain't a-going to work. If we was prisoners, it would, because then we'd have as many years as we wanted, in no hurry. But we wouldn't get but a few minutes to dig every day while they was changing watches, and so our hands wouldn't get blistered, and we could keep it up right along, year in and year out, and do it right, and the way it ought to be done. But we can't fool along. We got to rush. We ain't got no time to spare. If we was to put in another night this way, we'd have to knock off for a week to let our hands get well. Couldn't touch a case knife with them sooner. Well then, what are we going to do, Tom? I'll tell you, it ain't right, and it ain't moral, and I wouldn't like it to get out. But there ain't only just the one way. We gotta dig him out with the picks, and let on it's case knives. Now you're talking, I says. Your head gets leveler and leveler all the time, Tom Sawyer, I says. Picks is the thing, moral or no moral. And as for me, I don't care shucks for the morality of it, no how. When I start in to steal a nigger, or a watermelon, or a Sunday school book, I ain't no ways particular how it's done, so it's done. What I want is my nigger, or what I want is my watermelon, or what I want is my Sunday school book. And if a pick's the handiest thing, that's the thing I'm a-going to dig that nigger, or that watermelon, or that Sunday school book out with. And I don't give a dead rat what the authorities thinks about it, nuther. Well, he says, there's excuse for picks and letting on in a case like this. If it weren't so, I wouldn't approve of it. Nor I wouldn't stand by and see the rules broke. Because right is right, and wrong is wrong, and a body ain't got no business doing wrong when he ain't ignorant and knows better. It might answer for you to dig Jim out with a pick, without any letting on, because you don't know no better. But it wouldn't for me, because I do know better. Give me a case knife. He had his own by him, but I handed him mine. He flung it down and says, "Give me a case knife." I didn't know just what to do, but then I thought. I scratched around amongst the old tools and got a pickaxe and give it to him, and he took it and went to work and never said a word. He was always just that particular, full of principle. So then I got a shovel, and then we picked and shoveled, turnabout, and made the fur fly. We stuck to it about a half an hour, which was as long as we could stand up, but we had a good deal of a hole to show for it. When I got upstairs, I looked out the window and see Tom doing his level best with the lightning rod, but he couldn't come it. His hands were so sore. At last he says, "It ain't no use. It can't be done. What you reckon I better do? Can't you think of no way?" "Yes," I says, "but I reckon it ain't regular. Come up the stairs and let on it's a lightning rod." So he done it. Next day, Tom stole a pewter spoon and a brass candlestick in the house for to make some pens for Jim out of, and 6 tallow candles. And I hung around the nigger cabins and laid for a chance and stole 3 tin plates. Tom says it wasn't enough, but I said nobody would never see the plates that Jim throwed out, because they'd fall in the dog fennel and jimson weeds under the window hole. Then we could tote them back, and he could use them over again. So Tom was satisfied. Then he says, "Now, the thing to study out is how to get the things to Jim." "Take them in through the hole," I says, "when we get done." He only looked just scornful and said something about nobody ever heard of such an idiotic idea, and then he went to studying. By and by, he said he had ciphered out 2 or 3 ways, but there weren't no need to decide on any of them yet. Said we got to post Jim first. That night, we went down the lightning rod a little after 10, and took one of the candles along and listened under the window hole and heard Jim snoring. So we pitched it in, and it didn't wake him. Then we whirled in with the pick and shovel, and in about 2 hours and a half, the job was done. We crept in under Jim's bed and into the cabin and pawed around and found the candle and lit it and stood over Jim a while and found him looking hearty and healthy. And then we woke him up, gentle and gradual. He was so glad to see us, he most cried. He called us Honey and all the pet names he could think of, and was for having us hunt up a cold chisel to cut the chain off of his leg with right away, and clearing out without losing any time. But Tom, he showed him how unregular it would be, and sat down and told him all about our plans, and how we could alter them in a minute any time there was an alarm, and not to be the least afraid because we would see he got away sure. So Jim, he said it was all right, and we sat there and talked over old times a while, and then Tom asked a lot of questions, and when Jim told him Uncle Silas come in every day or two to pray with him, and Aunt Sally come in to see if he was comfortable, and had plenty to eat, and both of them was kind as they could be, Tom says, "Now I know how to fix it. We'll send you some things by them." I said, "Don't do nothing of the kind. It's one of the most jackass ideas I ever struck." But he paid no attention to me, went right on. It was his way when he'd got his plan set. So he told Jim how we'd have to smuggle in the rope ladder pie and other large things by Nat, the nigger that fed him, and he must be on the lookout and not be surprised, and not let Nat see him open them. And we would put small things in Uncle's coat pockets, and he must steal them out. And we would tie things to Aunt's apron strings, or put them in her apron pocket, if we got a chance, and told him what they would be and what they was for, and told him how to keep a journal on the shirt with his blood and all that. He told him everything. Jim, he couldn't see no sense in the most of it, but he allowed we was white folks and knowed better than him. So he was satisfied and said he would do it all just as Tom said. Jim had plenty corn cob pipes and tobacco, so we had a right down good sociable time. Then we crawled out through the hole and so home to bed, with hands that looked like they'd been charred. Tom was in high spirits. He said it was the best fun he ever had in his life and the most intellectual, and said if he only could see his way to it, we would keep it up all the rest of our lives and leave Jim to our children to get out, for he believed Jim would come to like it better and better the more he got used to it. He said that in that way it could be strung out to as much as 80 year and would be the best time on record. And he said it would make us all celebrated that had a hand in it. In the morning, we went out to the woodpile and chopped up the brass candlestick into handy sizes and put them and the pewter spoon in his pocket. Then we went to the nigger cabins, and while I got Nat's notice off, Tom shoved a piece of candlestick into the middle of a corn pone that was in Jim's pan, and we went along with Nat to see how it would work, and it just worked noble. When Jim bit into it, it most mashed all his teeth out, and there weren't ever anything could have worked better. Tom said so himself. Jim, he never let on, but it was only just a piece of rock or something like that that's always getting into bread, you know. But after that, he never bit into nothing but what he jabbed his fork into it in three or four places first. And while we was a-standing there in the dimmish light, here comes a couple of the hounds bulging in from under Jim's bed. And they kept on piling in there till there was 11 of them, and there weren't hardly room in there to get your breath. By jings, we forgot to fasten that lean-to door. The nigger Nat, he only just hollered, "Witches!" once, and keeled over onto the floor among the dogs, and begun to groan like he was dying. Tom jerked the door open and flung out a slab of Jim's meat, and the dogs went for it. And in 2 seconds, he was out himself and back again and shut the door, and I knowed he'd fix the other door, too. Then he went to work on the nigger, coaxing him and petting him and asking him if he'd been imagining he saw something again. He raised up and blinked his eyes around and says, "Mas Sid, you say I's a fool, but if I didn't believe I see most a million dogs or devils or something, I wished I may die right here in these tracks. I did most surely. Mas Sid, I felt 'em. I felt 'em, sir. They was all over me. Dad fetch it, I just wished I could get my hands on one of them witches. Just once. Only just once. It's all I'd asked. But mostly, I wish they'd let me alone, I does." Tom says, "Well, I tell you what I think. What makes them come here just at this runaway nigger's breakfast time? It's because they're hungry. That's the reason. You make them a witch pie. That's the thing for you to do." "But my lawn, Massa Sid, how's I going to make them a witch pie? I don't know how to make it. I ain't ever even heard of such before." Well then, I'll have to make it myself. Will you do it, honey? Will you? I'll worship the ground under your foot, I will. All right, I'll do it, seeing it's you. And you've been good to us and showed us the runaway nigger. But you gotta be mighty careful. When we come round, you turn your back. And then whatever we've put in the pan, don't you let on you see it at all. And don't you look when Jim unloads the pan. Something might happen. I don't know what. And above all, don't you handle the witch things. Handle him, Massa Sid. What is you were talking about? I wouldn't lay the weight of my finger on him. Not for 10 hundred thousand billion dollars, I wouldn't.